So imagine for a second, right, that your company's network has just been completely paralyzed.
Oh boy.
Yeah, every screen is locked, the alarms are blaring, and the executives are in an absolute panic because, years of data are just suddenly inaccessible.
Total nightmare scenario.
Right, and right in the middle of this absolute chaos, your cell phone rings.
Okay.
You pick it up, and this polite professional voice says, "Hi, my name is Andrew. I'm calling from a hacker group. I see your network is compromised, and I'm calling to assist you with your ransomware issues."
That is just wild.
It is. And the twist here is that Andrew is literally the very hacker who just burned your digital house down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a completely surreal scenario, but it is happening right now.
Yeah.
And it really just completely shatters that whole, comforting movie cliche we all have.
The guy in the hoodie.
Exactly. The lone wolf hacker sitting in a dark basement, furiously typing green code onto a black screen.
Yeah.
We like our villains to look like villains, right? It makes them easy to categorize.
For sure.
But the reality is far more corporate, and
Yeah.
honestly, just far more deeply psychological than that.
And that is exactly the illusion we're breaking today. Welcome to the deep dive. We have a stack of three recent cybersecurity intelligence reports in front of us, and honestly, reading through them feels less like a technical manual and way more like a cyberpunk corporate thriller.
It really does.
Right, we are talking about threat actors setting up literal corporate structures, complete with software licensing agreements, dedicated R&D departments, and yes, actual customer service call
It's a
centers.
whole industry.
So our mission today for you, the listener, is to synthesize these reports. We really want to unpack the escalating, multi-layered tactics of modern threat actors, and we are going to do it without, drowning you in impenetrable technical jargon.
Because in an era of just constant information overload, understanding how these breaches actually happen is vital for anyone online. We really need to look past the flashing warning lights and understand the business models that are driving these attacks.
Yeah.
What the intelligence is showing us is that the traditional perimeter of digital security is just completely dissolving.
Like it doesn't even exist anymore.
Pretty much. The tactics are shifting away from purely technical brute force and moving toward these bizarre, highly orchestrated psychological operations.
So let's start by looking at the very tools designed to keep networks safe in the first place, because the first major report we're looking at highlights a pretty terrifying trend, which is that attackers aren't just trying to bypass IT security tools anymore.
Right, they're using them.
Exactly, they are actively turning those tools into weapons. So CISA, the U.S. government cybersecurity agency, recently added a high-severity flaw to its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog. And it's for a major piece of software called N-able and Central. The CVE is CVE-2026-18577 for those keeping track. But for those of us who don't work in a server room, what exactly is this software? Like, why is it such a prime target?
So N-central is what the industry calls an RMM, which stands for a remote monitoring and management platform. Think of it as basically the central nervous system for an IT department. These platforms are incredibly powerful tools used mostly by managed service providers or MSPs.
And an MSP is like an outsourced IT team, right?
Exactly. They might handle the daily tech operations for dozens or even hundreds of different client companies. So to do that efficiently, they install this RMM software on every single computer they manage.
Makes sense.
It allows a single IT worker to remotely, push software updates or troubleshoot a broken printer or configure security settings on thousands of machines without ever leaving their desk.
So it inherently just has supreme privileges over everything it touches.
Supreme privileges, yeah, and universal trust. I mean, the computers on the network are explicitly programmed to accept commands from the RML without question.
Okay, let's unpack this because this next part is incredibly frustrating. The intelligence report notes that this new vulnerability, which by the way allows an attacker to completely bypass the login screen and just take over an account, is actually a case of incomplete patching for an older flaw. That's the
Yes.
kicker. Right, wait, hold on. If the vendor knew about this flaw previously, why are we dealing with incomplete patching now? Like, why didn't they just shut the door entirely the first time? It feels a bit like trying to fix a shattered window with a piece of duct tape.
It is a super common frustration. I totally get it. But it really highlights a massive challenge in modern software development. Patching a complex enterprise-grade platform isn't like, updating a simple weather app on your phone.
Sure.
These are unbelievably dense, deeply integrated systems with millions of lines of code. So when developers patch a vulnerability like this authentication bypass, they are often just closing the specific known pathway that an attacker used to sneak past the login screen.
Just the one they caught them using.
Right. But complex software is like a sprawling ancient castle. It has all these interconnected hidden pathways.
So they walled off the hallway the attacker used, but left the actual door unlocked.
Essentially, yes. Incomplete patching usually means the underlying logical flaw in the code's architecture wasn't fully rooted out. So the attacker simply walked the perimeter of the castle, probed the walls, and just found a different unmapped corridor that led them to the exact same unlocked door.
Wow. And once they get through that door, I mean, the damage scales incredibly fast. The reports note they abuse a built-in feature of the software called Take Control to basically pivot into all those managed endpoints and establish persistence.
Right.
So this isn't just a burglar picking the lock on a single apartment, right? This is the burglar stealing the building manager's master key ring. They literally have the keys to the entire complex.
The master key analogy is perfectly accurate
because
attackers are businessmen at heart, you know?
Yeah.
And they are always looking for efficiency.
Right. Time is money.
Exactly. Trying to hack individual employees one by one with phishing emails is slow, it's noisy, and it's inefficient. Why break down 100 individual doors when you can compromise the central management tool and just instantly gain persistent administrative access to thousands of machines across multiple companies?
It's a supply chain attack on the concept of trust itself.
It really is.
And what's really insidious is how they try to blend into that trusted environment once they have the master key. So Huntress, the threat hunters observing these attacks, noticed the hackers were logging in using the username MSPSupport. Which is just a default username tied to legitimate remote IT sessions. They are literally putting on a fake IT uniform to walk around the building.
Just blending right in.
Yeah. And to mask where they're coming from, they route their malicious traffic through commercial everyday VPNs. The security reports specifically name Mulvad and NordVPN exit nodes being unhosed. Yeah, I actually have the IPs here. Specifically, they noted 37.19.210.32, which was previously used for brute forcing, and 87.249.138.34. They just want to look like a regular IT guy working remotely from a coffee shop.
And this is exactly why the government gave federal civilian executive branch agencies a strict deadline, August 6, 2026, to apply the fixes for this. Because when an attacker is wearing the uniform and holding the master key, standard security alarms simply do not go off. The network just assumes everything is fine.
Right. Okay, so abusing an IT management tool gets them quiet, persistent, deeply embedded access. But what happens when a different group of attackers decides to just, you know, kick down the digital front door instead?
That's a whole different ballgame.
Because that brings us to the second major threat outlined in our stack of reports. We are looking at a group operating something called INC ransomware, and they are heavily exploiting zero-day flaws in enterprise VPNs, specifically SonicWall Secure Mobile Access 1000 series hardware.
Right, CVE-2026-15409 and 15410.
Exactly. Now, before we get into the damage they cause, can you just quickly unpack what a zero day actually means in this context?
Yeah, so a zero day is essentially a digital defender's worst nightmare. The term literally means the software vendor had exactly 0 days of notice to prepare for the attack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The vulnerability was discovered by the hackers and actively weaponized in the wild before the good guys even knew the flaw existed.
So there's no patch.
Right. There is no patch available to stop it. The attackers just have completely free run at the target.
And the threat cluster exploiting this vulnerability is tracking them as UTA-0533. They aren't just smashing and grabbing.
No, they're digging in.
The intelligence shows that once they break through the VPN, they quietly lay down a whole array of custom tools. They drop this Python script called Knuckleball. They use an open source proxy called SUO5 and a custom Java web shell called OrangeTail.
Just a full toolkit.
Right. They are essentially building their own hidden scaffolding inside the victim's network so they can execute commands and move around completely undetected. But here is the detail that actually made my jaw drop.
Let's hear it.
They aren't just using the scaffolding to steal standard passwords. They are specifically hunting down and extracting time-based one-time password MFA seeds for long-term access.
Yeah, that is brutal.
How is stealing a seed different from just stealing a password? Like, why is that so much worse?
This is a profoundly important distinction, and it gets to the core of why these specific attacks are so devastating. So when you set up multi-factor authentication, say, an authenticator app on your smartphone, you usually scan a QR code provided by your company.
Right, it's a little square barcode thing.
Exactly. That QR code contains a seed, which is essentially a complex cryptographic secret, and that secret is now shared in two places, on the company's authentication server and inside the app on your phone.
Okay, I'm following.
Both sides use that exact same seed, combined with the current time down to the second, to run a mathematical equation. That equation spits out those synchronized six-digit codes you type in to log in.
Oh, wait. So if the attacker extracts the seed directly from the compromised VPN appliance?
If they steal that cryptographic seed, they can run the exact same mathematical equation you do.
No way.
Yeah. They perfectly clone your digital authenticator.
Yeah.
They don't need to intercept your text messages, and they don't need to trick you into clicking approve on a push notification. They can just generate valid, perfectly timed, six-digit codes indefinitely.
So they completely bypass the secondary security check.
Completely. This makes all of their malicious movement across the internal corporate network look exactly like legitimate, fully authenticated employee activity.
That completely invalidates the very concept of multi-factor authentication. I mean, we are always told that MFA is the silver bullet that stops hackers even if they get our password. But if they steal the seed, the bullet is completely useless.
It really is.
And clearly, this level of total invisible access is paying off for them. Ransomware. Live noted that this group has claimed 885 victims as of early August 2026.
That's a massive scale.
It's huge. But this brings us back to the scenario we opened with, because here's where it gets really interesting. It's not just the technical exploitation of MFA seeds that makes INC ransomware stand out. Once organizations are breached and the files are locked, Res Security reported that the victims receive those phone calls.
Right, the shift from technical exploitation to just brazen psychological warfare.
Real human phone calls to the victim's cell phone. A polite guy named Andrew, or Alex, calling from a +1 304 area code 304-384-0401, specifically calmly stating he's with a hacker group, noting the network is compromised, and offering the email address info at hulprans.com to assiddle with ransomware issues.
It's wild.
It's exactly like an arsonist setting your house on fire and then calling your cell phone to casually offer fire extinguishing services for a fee.
It's an incredibly chilling tactic, but when you look at the business psychology behind it, it makes a twisted sort of sense. Ransomware groups have realized that their victims are their customers, essentially.
That is so dark.
It is, but think about it. During a major cyber attack, the customer is usually paralyzed by panic. The IT systems are down, executives are screaming, total chaos takes over. The hackers know that if the victim is too overwhelmed to figure out how to buy cryptocurrency and negotiate, the hackers don't get paid.
So they essentially have to walk their victims off the ledge just to rob them.
Precisely. By adopting this bizarre faux professional customer support persona, the attackers are trying to establish a twisted form of trust and communication. They become the calming, helpful consultant to their own extortion scheme. It just smooths out the transaction process.
It's just so deeply cynical, calling the victim up to provide tech support for the malware you just deployed. I mean, it proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that we are dealing with organized crime syndicates that have recognized the financial value of running a literal customer service department.
Oh, absolutely.
But that scale, hundreds of victims, custom web shells, dedicated call centers, exploiting complex RMM software that demands an unbelievable amount of infrastructure and development. Like, how are these groups pulling all of this off simultaneously?
Well, the secret is that they aren't building it all themselves.
Really?
Yeah, to understand the sheer scale of modern cyber attacks, we really have to look at the underground supply chain. The illicit service economy that's powering these threats is what allows them to move so fast.
Mm.
They basically just rent their capabilities.
Which brings us to the third intelligence report in our stack, detailing a new, highly sophisticated loader-as-a-service operation out of Russia called Double Cup.
Right.
Just the name alone sounds like a trendy Silicon Valley tech startup.
It effectively operates exactly like a tech startup, just, you know, an illicit one. In the cybercrime world, a loader is a piece of specialized malware with a single, very specific job. It doesn't encrypt your files, and it doesn't steal your passwords. Its only purpose is to sneak past antivirus software, establish a quiet foothold in the system, and then open the door to load the actual destructive payload like the INC ransomware we just discussed.
Oh.
And the developers of Double Cup are renting out this stealth capability to other criminals.
And the way this loader sneaks into the system is wildly creative. The report mentions they use something called a click-fix lure to trick the user. So how does that work?
So a click-fix lure relies on social engineering rather than breaking a system mechanically. The user might visit a compromised website and a highly realistic fake error message pops up, looking exactly like a Google Chrome or Microsoft Word error.
We've all seen those.
Right. And the message says something like, a critical error occurred. Copy and paste this command into your terminal to fix the issue.
It relies on the human being helpful and trying to fix the problem themselves, thereby bypassing their own security by executing the malicious code manually.
Oh man, so the human literally invites the vampire inside.
But once inside, the malware uses a technique called steganography to hide itself inside a standard PNG image file that gets dropped into the victim's browser cache. Now, how on earth does a hacker weaponize a standard picture of, say, a company logo or a cat without it looking totally distorted to the user?
Steganography feels like magic, but it's really just manipulating the underlying structure of digital files. An image file is made up of millions of pixels, right? And each pixel is represented by a string of code dictating its exact color.
Right.
What attackers do is subtly alter the least significant bits of that code. They essentially weave their malicious instructions into the empty spaces of the image's data structure.
So you can't even see it.
No. To the human eye, and even to most automated security scanners, the image looks perfectly normal. The colors haven't changed in a way a human can detect. It just looks like a standard graphic temporarily cached by your web browser. But hidden within those pixels is a compressed malicious payload just waiting to be extracted.
That is brilliant. But here's the part of the Double Cup report that really blew my mind.
Yeah?
The payload hidden in that image is heavily encrypted. And to decrypt it and unleash the count loader and device manager RET into the computer's memory, it requires a very specific cryptographic key.
Yep.
The key it uses is the victim's own public IP address. The malware literally weaponizes your own digital footprint to unlock itself.
It is an incredibly elegant, highly effective anti-analysis technique.
It's crazy.
Think about this from a defender's perspective, right? Let's say a security researcher at a cybersecurity firm manages to find that suspicious PNG file on a victim's computer. The researcher copies the file and takes it back to their highly secure, isolated lab to analyze it and figure out how it works.
Okay.
But the researcher's lab has a completely different public IP address than the original victim's network.
Ah, so the cipher just fails. The file simply won't unlock.
Exactly. The malware effectively acts like a locked package that checks its own GPS coordinates. It will only detonate when it mathematically verifies it is sitting precisely on the specific victim's network. If it's anywhere else, it stays locked and dormant, making it incredibly difficult for researchers to study and build defenses against.
It's like a smart bomb that refuses to explode in the laboratory.
That's a great way to put it.
And once it does detonate on the correct network, it uses something called ether hiding for its command and control communications, quietly concealing itself inside normal-looking web traffic so the security alarms don't go off.
Right.
So what does this all mean? As technically fascinating as the steganography and the IP address locks are, honestly, the most alarming part of the Double Cup report is the business model itself.
The as-a-service model is really what changes the game entirely here.
Yes, because Socradar researchers discovered an open directory leak at 213.139.77.1/9 on port 9090 that exposed Double Cup's entire back-end infrastructure. And what they found was a fully fleshed-out commercial platform.
A real business.
Yeah, it has a slick graphical user interface. It features a payload builder pane with drop-down menus. It has a complete licensing system where the core developers track their criminal clients' active subscriptions. They even manage everything through an automated Telegram bot at Harry Potter Low BOT that tracks client visits, delivers cryptographic keys, and just manages the whole server infrastructure.
What you're describing is a turnkey solution for enterprise cybercrime. They've taken highly complex advanced evasion techniques and wrapped them in a user-friendly interface. You don't need to know how to code complex steganography or IT-based cryptography anymore.
You just pay them.
You buy a subscription, click some drop-down menus, pick your evasion method, and the system generates the malware for you automatically.
It's literal point-and-click cyber warfare.
It is. And this plug-and-play service economy is exactly the connective tissue between all of our sources today. It is exactly why we are seeing such a massive volume of sophisticated attacks on tools like NCentral and SonicWall. The barrier to entry has completely collapsed. A relatively unskilled cybercriminal group doesn't need to invent a zero-day exploit. They can just buy one. They don't need to invent a way to bypass antivirus. They rent access to Double Cup's advanced loader. And they use that rented loader to deliver rented ransomware, utilizing rented initial access. It's a fully modular, deeply specialized, and highly efficient global supply chain.
It is a terrifyingly efficient ecosystem. Which brings us back to you, the listener, and what you can really take away from all of this. If there is one overarching lesson from synthesizing these reports, it is that the perimeter of digital security is dissolving in real time.
Absolutely.
We have to completely discard the old stereotype of the lone hacker in the basement. Modern threat actors are operating as organized, multi-tier tech corporations. They have R&D departments developing advanced, self-locking anti-analysis tools like DoubleCup. They have customer service lines running slick extortion operations for INC ransomware. And they are intensely focused on exploiting the exact tools IT professionals use to keep you safe, stealing the master keys to the castle, like with Enable and Central.
The sophistication of modern cybercrime is no longer just found in the lines of code. It is found in the organizational structure, the supply chain logistics, and the deep psychological understanding of the attack itself.
Which leaves us with a profound and slightly unsettling final thought to chew on. Think about the reality we've just unpacked today. If malware can hide silently in a cached image of a company logo, mathematically weaponizing your own IP address against you as a lock and key, and if ransomware gangs are literally running polite call centers, phoning you up to act as consultants to help you recover from their own attacks, how do we even begin to redefine trust in our digital lives?
That is the defining question of this era, really. As the highly technical exploits blend seamlessly with social engineering and psychological manipulation, knowing who or what to trust becomes our single greatest vulnerability.
Will we soon reach a point where we need artificial intelligence just to verify that the polite person on the phone helping us recover from a hack isn't actually the hacker themselves? The digital landscape is shifting fast. From the illusion of the lone wolf to the very real digital arsonist calling your cell phone, it's a wild world out there. Stay curious, stay safe, and we'll catch you on the next deep dive.